When I was a third grade teacher, there were certain subjects I loved to teach because of my own interest in them. I loved to teach social studies because I love history. I loved to teach reading because I loved to read and loved literature. Other subjects were not so much areas of expertise, and so they were a bit more challenging, science especially. I still remember the day when my third grade class was studying the human circulatory system. For that night, I sent home for homework a diagram of the heart that I had carefully drawn out on a piece of paper. And on that diagram, I had various arrows showing the path of blood through the heart, through the atrium and ventricles, from the lungs into the heart and out into the arteries and back through the veins. Their job that night was to identify each of those chambers and bring back their assignment. And the next day, indeed, they did. And as I went through them, I noticed there was a note from a parent attached to one of the papers, informing me in a gracious but very clear way that all of my arrows had the blood running through the heart in the wrong direction. It is a very good thing that I did not decide to take up the study of medicine. Instead, I decided to pursue the vocation of ordained ministry. And lo and behold, I am still called upon to describe and sometimes diagnose the condition of the human heart. Or at the very least, to offer an interpretation of the words of others who describe our mutual heart conditions. Did you hear Jeremiah speak today of the human heart? He was not speaking of just one individual heart, but the hearts of a people, in some sense a collective heart, his people, living in the 6th century before the birth of Christ. His words in this 31st chapter of his writings are certainly words of hope and promise. They are good news, for he said this, "This is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel after those days, says the Lord, I will put my law within them, and I will write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they will be my people." Now, there's some major heart surgery intended here for the people of God and intended for their good. But before we jump to this good news, it is important to remember the condition of the patient when Jeremiah first wrote them. They were a people living in Jerusalem and in Judah who were being overtaken by the Babylonians. Some had already been taken, perhaps into exile in Jerusalem, religious and leaders of the community in exile. They were a people who may have felt that they were either abandoned by God or about to be abandoned. But Jeremiah was adamant that their plight was due to their own abandonment of the covenant that God had established with them. He looked around at his society, and he saw that the poor were neglected and oppressed. The rich were becoming richer and richer, often at the expense of the poor. The worship of idols had become common. The community, which had been formed by the Torah, the law, as embodied in the Ten Commandments, was incapable of keeping them. That's the diagnosis Jeremiah has for his people. And lest we think that Jeremiah had a fuzzy, romantic notion of the human heart, just waiting to be filled by the warm and soft love of God, listen to these words from earlier in his prophecy. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately corrupt. Who can understand it? Ah, the human heart. Who can fully understand it? Do we ever fully understand the motivations that cause us to act, to think, to speak? Sometimes we don't understand how compassionate we can be. But there are also those times when we don't understand how cruel we can be, how callous we can be. What Jeremiah and the ancient Hebrews did believe was that the heart was also the seat of the will. And to love God with your whole heart, then indeed was to love God with your mind and with your strength. Those of you who are here on Ash Wednesday at the very beginning of our Lenten season together read these words to God. We have not loved you with our whole heart and mind and strength. We acknowledged in that service that there is room in our hearts for ill will, for hatred, for self-centeredness, and a disregard of others. We acknowledge that the heart is a place where we not only deceive others, but sometimes deceive ourselves. The human heart, a seat of deceit and corruption, and yet it is the very place, Jeremiah proclaims, where God will do a new thing. God will make a new covenant with the people, not inscribed on scrolls or engraved in stone, but rather written upon their hearts. And how will God do this? What is the means? Jeremiah tells us, "For I will forgive their iniquity and remember their sin no more." Forgiveness. It's a word we use a lot in church. You may recall Ash Wednesday was on the same day as Valentine's this year. I sometimes think the word forgiveness is a little bit like those inscriptions on the candy hearts. It's a slogan, it's a word, we say it, we talk about it, but do we really know what it means and what it means to experience it? We can be fearful of entering into the act of seeking forgiveness. For to do so means acknowledging, yes, in the depths of our hearts, that truth about ourselves and others. We're in the midst right now in our national life of some truth-telling. Witness the Me Too movement as more women and, yes, even some men come forward to tell not only their personal stories, but to bear witness to a larger cultural heart condition. The abuse by those in power of those without power. It's the heart condition that Jeremiah knew about. And yet, even when those confronted seek to address or begin to acknowledge claims against them, how many times do we still hear sentences that begin with, "Well, if I have offended anyone, then I am sorry. Or if I have caused someone pain, then I apologize." I know I've used phrases like that before, and that has not brought me to the heart of seeking forgiveness. Or what if we count ourselves amongst those who feel that there is nothing we need forgiveness for, and that there is never anything we have done wrong, and that everything that happens is someone else's fault, someone else's plot against us? We may fear acknowledging the condition of our hearts, but oh, forgiveness is such a powerful medicine. I still remember a moment in my first year as a pastor of several small Vermont congregations, and indeed it was my first year of ministry. I had arranged to meet Helen. She was one of the matriarchs of the smallest church that I served. I had agreed to meet her and her husband at the village cemetery for a graveside service for her late sister. It was going to be a very small service, only Helen and her husband and the funeral director there at the grave. But I was determined to plan and lead a suitably dignified service that would honor this woman's life. And it was one of my first funeral services, so I prepared well. Except for one thing. The morning of the funeral, I forgot all about it. Now, this was in a day before cell phones, and I'm old enough to tell you that answering machines were just coming into vogue, and I didn't have one in the parsonage. But fortunately, I was home that morning when the phone rang. And when I picked it up and heard Helen's voice on the other end, I looked at the clock And my heart sank, for I suddenly remembered where I was supposed to be and what I had forgotten. Helen and her husband had waited for about 25 minutes there at the cemetery, and then they had gone back to the house where she was now calling me. And yes, they could still return to the cemetery if I had time and could drive the 12 miles over to meet them there. And so I did. And, you know, I don't remember leading a dignified service. What I remember was how embarrassed I felt and how bad I felt about letting down this faithful and committed parishioner. The next Sunday after church, I went up to Helen and again told her how sorry I was about what had happened. She nodded her head as I spoke, took my hands in hers, thanked me, and then said three words. I forgive you. And I was stunned. For actually, that was not what I was really expecting to hear. What I expected to hear were words like, oh, don't worry about it. Or, oh, it was nothing. Or, it could have happened to anyone. But instead, Helen forgave me. And in so doing, Helen acknowledged her disappointment and perhaps her hurt that I hadn't shown up. She had been let down. But she was forgiving me and moving on. And I left for my next church that morning feeling freed, ready to move on myself. For if she had said any of those other phrases, I'm pretty sure I would have gone away wondering, did she really mean it? Was it really okay that I had screwed up? In fact, it wasn't okay. And having named that truth, Helen freed us both. For I will forgive their iniquity, Jeremiah said, and remember their sin no more. And you know, in the next 5 years, Helen never brought up that incident again. And don't we know how many times we bring up, either in our own minds and hearts, or in our words to others, incidents, experiences, hurts that ultimately have not yet been forgiven, where there has not yet been reconciliation. We can doubt our need to forgive others. We can also doubt that we will be forgiven. Can we truly trust God to forgive? For that is what Jeremiah is talking about here. Jeremiah laid out the sins of his people before them, and they may have resisted that word of truth. But we, like they, may resist even more another truth, that forgiveness is possible and is life-giving. Yes, that is the word that comes from this prophet of judgment. Forgiveness is ultimately the forgiver's initiative, the forgiver's decision. God, speaking through Jeremiah, initiated the renewal of a relationship, the relationship or covenant that the people had forgotten. I had the direction of the blood flow all wrong in my diagram of the human heart, and I fear at times that we have that flow of energy wrong in our attempts to relate to God. That we spend so much time trying to reach out to God, to define God, or to justify ourselves before God, completely missing the reality of God's divine action, that constant energy of love that is flowing from the divine heart, seeking to know us and love us, and yes, forgive us. Jeremiah spoke to his people in a particular time with a particular promise for that community. But is it any wonder that the church took up these words from Jeremiah and saw the very same message in the life and death and resurrection of Jesus Christ? That God is pursuing us, and pursuing us with a forgiving love. So perhaps the scriptures today before us are indeed for us a note from a loving parent explaining in a gracious but very clear way just where the flow of divine love comes from, for whom it is intended, and the life-giving power it has for all who are willing to receive it. Amen.